Welcome to John Lennon, the Rolling Stone interview podcast. This is the first of what will be a weekly series of installments of the full historic interview. The interview was conducted by founding editor and publisher Jan S. Wenner in December of 1970. A brief word about the audio you're about to hear. While John was mic'd, our interviewer was not. For that reason, we've had to boost the audio so that you can hear Jan's questions and exchanges with Lennon. So you will notice a difference in the sound from time to time. Nothing has been removed. Here now is part one of John Lennon, the Rolling Stone interview podcast.
Oh, you got notes and all that.
Yeah.
Well, we have to get it right, don't we?
Gives a bit of paper to doodle on. Or is it all notes? Okay. No, when you get through the first one, I'll have it. Thank you. Okay. Don't be shy.
No, I'm not. Let's have a second. Are you pleased with your album? The new album?
Yes. I mean, I'm very pleased, you know. And there's lots of things I would have liked to improve, you know.
Like what?
Well, I learned a lot on this album, you know, technically, that I didn't have to learn so much before, because there's usually, I don't know, there'd be, say, George Paul, and I would all be listening to it, and I wouldn't have to think so much about each individual sound. So there's a few things I learned about bass, you know, on one track or the other, where you can get more in, and where I lost it on a track like that. Some technical things that irritated me finally, but as a concept and as a whole thing, I'm pleased. Yeah. That's about it, really. You know what I mean? I mean, if I get down to the nitty gritty, you know, it'd drive me mad. You know, but I like it. Otherwise, I wouldn't have put it out.
When you record, you go for feeling or for perfection of the sound?
Well, I like both. You know, I go for feeling. Most takes are right off. And most times I sang it and played it at the same time. You know, I can't stand putting the back in, which is what we used to do a lot in the old days. But they're always dead, you know. I got into that sort of dead Beatles sound or dead recording sound. So I like to... Some of them are like second take or something, right off, you know.
It starts out with bells.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I was watching TV, as usual, in California, and there was this old horror movie on, and I just heard that bells sounded like that to me. But they're probably different, because those were actually other bells slowed down that I used on the album. They just sounded like that, and I just thought, oh, that's how to start Mother, you know. And I knew Mother was going to be the first track, so...
You said you wrote most of them in California?
Well, a lot of it. Actually, I wrote Mother in England, didn't I? And Isolation in England. It just seems though it was all written. I finished them off in California. I mean, you can go into detail. You have to push me if you want more detail, because otherwise I'll just forget. Look at Me was written around the Beatles' double album time. You know, I just never got it. Got it done, you know. There's a few like that lying around.
You said that this, you know, that this would be the first Primal album.
When did I say that?
In California.
Yes, well, I don't know.
Have you gone off that?
No, I haven't gone off. It's just like, Primal was like another mirror, you know. And I just...
See, because he sort of, like any artist, I suppose, but... Because he really wants to sort of be honest with himself and the albums and all that, you know. What he does is, instead of just patching up something that's sort of interesting, so-so or something, he really puts himself in, his life in it, you know. And so, like when he went to India and he was influenced by Maharishi. And so
it's really like, you know, like writers take themselves to Singapore to get the atmosphere. So wherever I am, you know. So in that way, it's a Primal album, but it's like is George's the first Gita album?
Right.
You know.
So it's that relevant.
The Primal screen was at the mirror, you know, and he was looking at the mirror.
Yeah. Let's talk about Nick Jenner for a second. when you came out to San Francisco, you had that, you wanted to do that ad.
Yeah.
You wanted to say, this is it.
Well, I think that's something people go through at the beginning of that therapy, you know, because you're so astounded at what you find out about yourself that you think, well, surely somebody, nobody's heard, you know, surely this is something, because it happens to you, you think, well, this is, must be the first time it's happened, you know. So it's just full of it like that. Okay. Okay. You know, so it was just like, and also it was like we wanted to come out, so that I like to need to have a reason for going somewhere, otherwise I'm too nervous. Mm-hmm. So I conned myself, you know, and that was a good way of coming to San Francisco to see you, in a way, you know. And then I have an objective, I'm going to do an advert, and this is what we're going to, so we come in the office, we're going to do this and all that, and then we sit, settle down, we just talk, you know. So it's really like that.
But
I still think I think the therapy is great, you know. But I just don't want to make it into a big Maharishi thing. That, like you were right to tell me forget the advert, and that's why I don't even want to talk too much about it.
Mm.
If people know what I've been through there, and if they want to find out, they can find out, you know. Otherwise, it turns into that again.
So you
know.
Feel that this is the single thing to do.
I don't know, you see, because I've no idea about any other therapy. You know, I don't think anything else would work on me so well. But then, of course, I'm not through with it. You know, it's a process that's going on. We primal almost daily,
mm-hmm.
And the only difference, I don't really want to get this big primal thing going because it gets so embarrassing. You know. And the thing, in a nutshell, primal therapy allowed us to feel feelings continually. And those feelings usually make you cry. That's all. So, because before I wasn't feeling things, that's all. I was having blocks to the feelings. When the feelings come through, you cry. It's as simple as that, really.
Do you think the experience of therapy helped you become a better singer?
Oh no!
Do you think your singing is better on this album?
Well, it's probably better because I've got the whole time to myself, you know. I mean, I'm pretty good at home with my tapes, you know, like it's like that. But this time, it was my album, and I didn't have to. It used to get a bit embarrassing in front of George and Paul because we know each other so well. Oh, look, he's trying to be Elvis, or he's doing this now. You know, we were a bit super critical of each other, so we inhibited each other a lot. And now I had Yoko there. And Phil there, alternatively and together, who sort of love me, okay, so I can perform better. And I relaxed, you know. I've got a studio at home now, and I think it'll be better next time, because that's even less inhibiting than going to EMI. You know? It's like that.
Mm.
But the looseness of the singing was developing on Cold Turkey from the experience of Yoko's singing. See, she does not inhibit her throat.
It says on the album that Yoko does wind.
Yeah. Well, she played wind, you know. I mean, she played the atmosphere. But she wasn't around. She did. She has a musical ear, and she can produce rock and roll. She can produce me, you know, which she did for some of the tracks. I'm not going to start saying she did this and he did that. But when Phil couldn't come at first, you know. You don't have to have been born and bred in rock. She knows when a bass sounds right, when the guy's playing out of rhythm, and when the engineer, she has a bit of trouble. The engineer thinks, well, who the hell is this? You know, what does she know about it? So she did that for me, you know.
On Working Class Hero, it sounds like an early Dylan song.
Well, anybody that sings with a guitar and just sings about something heavy will tend to sound like Dylan. I'm bound to be influenced by those, because that's the only kind of really folk music I ever listened to. I never liked the fruity Judy Collins and Byers and all that stuff, you know. So the only folk music I know is those, the minor dungaree, you know, that sort of about miners up in Newcastle, or Dylan. So in that way I'd be influenced, you know, but it doesn't sound like Dylan to me. Does it sound like Dylan to you?
Only in the instrumentation now.
But no, but that's the only way to play. You know, you go jing 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 jing. I mean, I never listened to that hard to him. You know.
What's November 5th?
In England, it's the day they blew up the Houses of Parliament. We celebrate it by having bonfires every November the 5th. It just was an ad lib, you know. We'd been doing, it was about the third take. And I just got to the remember, and it begins to sound like Frankie Lane, you know, when you sing, remember. And then it was the end, I didn't know how to go, remember, the 5th of November. You know, and I just broke up. And it went on for about another 7 or 8 minutes, you know, I was just ad-libbing and goofing about. But then I cut it there and just exploded, because it was a good joke. And haven't you ever heard of Guy Fawkes?
Guy Fawkes.
That's the Guy Fawkes Day, yeah. And I thought it was just poignant that we should blow up the Houses of Parliament.
Do you get embarrassed sometimes when you hear the album, when you think about how personal it is?
I get embarrassed. Sometimes I can hear it and be embarrassed, just by the performance or by the music or by the statements. And sometimes I don't, you know. I change daily, you know. Or, like, just before it's coming out, I can't bear to hear it, you know, in the house or play it to anybody. But a few months before that, I can play it to everyone. And it just changes all the time, you see. Sometimes I used to listen to something, I don't know, Buddy Holly or anything. One day the record would sound twice as fast as the next day. Did you ever experience that on a single? I used to have that, like, Hound Dog or something. One day it would sound very slow, and one day it would sound very fast. And it was just just my feeling towards it, you know, the way I heard it. So it can do that. But that's where you've got to make your artistic judgment to say, well, this is the take and this isn't, you know. That's where you have to make the decision when it sounds reasonable.
What is your concept of pain?
I don't know what you mean, really.
Well, on the song God,
yes,
it starts off by saying God is a concept by which we measure our pain.
Well, pain is the pain we go through all the time, you know. And like, you're born in pain, you know, and pain is what we're in most of the time. And I think that the bigger the pain, the more gods we need, you know.
There's a tremendous body of literature, of philosophical literature, about God as a measurement of pain.
Oh, I never heard about it. See, it was my own revelation. See, I don't know who wrote about it or what anybody else said. I just know that's what I know. Amazing.
But you just felt it.
Yeah, I felt it, you see. So when I felt it, it's like I was crucified, you know. So I know what they're talking about now.
Difference between George Martin and Phil Spector?
Well, George Martin, I don't know. You see, for quite a few of our albums, like the Beatles double album, George Martin didn't really produce it, you know. I don't know whether this is slanderous, but he didn't, you know. And I can't remember, you know. In the early days, I can remember what George Martin did, you know.
What did he
do? He would translate. Well, I always think, he did it, if Paul wanted to use violins and that, he would translate it for him. Like, in My Life, there's an Elizabethan piano solo in it. So he would do things like that. He'd say, play like Bach or something. Could you put 12 bars in there? And he helped us develop a language a little, you know, to talk to musicians. But I was never, because I'm very shy, and many, many reasons, I didn't very much go for musicians, you know. I didn't like to have to go and see 20 guys sitting there and try and tell them what to do, because they were all so lousy anyway, you know. So apart from the early days, I didn't have much to do with it, you know. I did it myself, you know.
Why do you use Phil now instead of George Martin?
Well, it's not instead of George Martin. I would not use anybody rather than use George Martin or somebody like that. That's nothing personal against George Martin. He just doesn't. He's more Paul's style of music than mine, you know. But I don't know. I mean, I use. It's a drag to do both, you know. To go in the recording studio, it's simple as that. You go in there and then you got to run back and say, did you get it, you know.
Did Phil make any special
contributions? Phil, yes, because Phil's, I believe, is a great artist. But like all great artists, he's very neurotic, you know. But we'd done quite a few tracks together, Yoko and I. And she'd been encouraging me in the other room and all that. And we were just lagging, and Phil moved in and brought in a new life to because we were getting heavy. We'd done a few things, you know, and the thrill of recording had worn off a little.
Now? In 8 minutes, Yoko.
Okay, 8 minutes, we'll put it on. That's Pete, do you know Pete? No. That's Pete Bennett, the great, and that's Jan Wenner, the great. Great, okay. Will you tell him to ring us in 8 minutes? So you can sort of, thanks. You can hear Spectre here and there, you know. And it's like there's no specifics. You can just hear him.
Let me start again.
Yeah. Okay.
Are you pleased with the album?
Yes. This from the top. Of course I'm pleased with it. Yeah.
What do you think of it?
I think it's the best thing I've ever done. I think it's realistic. And it's true to me that has been developing over the years from in my life, like I'm a Loser, Help, Strawberry Fields. They were all personal records. I always wrote about me. I didn't really enjoy writing third-person songs about people who lived in concrete flats and things. I like first-person music. But because of my hang-ups and many other things, I would only now and then specifically write about me, you know. And now I wrote all about me, you know? And that's why I like it. It's me and nobody else. So I like it, you know?
So you think, like, basically, the honesty of it is?
It's real, you know? It's about me, and I don't know about anything else, really. And the only true songs I ever wrote were, like, Help and Strawberry Fields, you know? And if I can name a few, I can't think of them offhand, that I always considered my best songs. They were the ones that I really wrote from experience, and not projecting myself into a situation and writing a nice story about it, which I always found phony. But I'd find occasion to do it because I'd have to produce so much work, or because I'd be so hung up I couldn't even think about myself, you know.
For instance, on this album there's like practically no imagery at all.
No. Because there's none in my head, you know. There's no hallucinations.
There's no newspaper taxis.
No, I was consciously writing poetry then. Mm. And that's self-conscious poetry, you know. Mm. But the poetry on this album is superior to anything I've done because it's not self-conscious in that way. I've tried, you know, I had least trouble writing the songs of all time, you know.
No bullshit.
Yeah, no bullshit, is it? You know.
The music is very simple, very sparse.
Well, I always liked simple rock, you know. There's a great one in England now, I Hear You Knocking, you know. And I liked Spirit in the Sky a few months back. I always liked simple rock and nothing else, you know. And I was influenced by acid and got psychedelic, you know, like the whole generation. But really, I like rock and roll, you know, and I express myself best in rock. And I had a few ideas to do this with Mother and that with Mother, but when you just hear, the piano does it all for you, your mind can do the rest of it. I think the backings on mine are as complicated as the backings on any record you've ever heard. You know? If you've got an ear, you can hear, anybody knows, any musician will tell you, just play a note on a piano, it's got all them harmonics in it, you know. So it got to that, you know. What the hell? I didn't need anything else, you know.
How did you put together the litany in God?
What's litany?
Well, the I don't believe in magic, it starts off.
Like a lot of the words, they just came out of my mouth. It started off like that, you know. So I was, God was stuck together from three songs almost. I had the idea, God is a concept by which we measure our pain. So when you have a word like that, you just sit down and sing the first tune that comes into your head, and the tune is the symbol, God is a concept. bum 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 bum, you know, because I like that kind of music. And then I just rolled into it. I don't believe in magic, and it was just going on in my head, and I Ching and Bible, and the first three or four just came out, whatever came out, you know.
When did you know that you were going to be working towards then, to I Don't Believe in Beatles?
I don't know when I realized I was putting down all these things that I didn't believe in, you know. So I could have gone on. It was like a Christmas card list, you know. I thought, well, where do I end? You know, Churchill and who have I missed out? It got like that, you know. And I thought, I had to stop, you know. So, yeah, and then I was going to leave a gap and say, just fill in your own, you know, for whoever you don't believe in. It was just got out of hand, you know. So, but Beatles was the final thing because it's like I no longer believe in myth, you know, and Beatles is another myth, you know. I don't believe in it. The dream's over, you know. And I'm not just talking about the Beatles, is over. I'm talking about the generation thing, you know. The dream's over, like it's over, you know. And we gotta, well, I have anyway, personally, gotta get down to so-called reality.
When did you become aware that? I mean, that song will obviously be is the one that's being played the most.
Well, I didn't know that because up here they're playing. They're not playing. I don't know. I'll be able to tell in a week or so, really, what's going on. Because they started off playing Look at Me because it was easy. And they probably thought it was the Beatles or something. So I don't know if that is the one. Well, that's the one. God and Working Class Hero are probably the best whatevers, you know, sort of ideas or feelings on the record.
Why did you choose to refer to Dylan as Zimmerman?
Because Dylan is bullshit. Zimmerman is his name. You know, you see, I don't believe in Dylan, you know, and I think I don't believe in Tom Jones either, you know, in that way. You know, Zimmerman is his name. My name isn't John Beetle, it's John Lennon, you know, just like that.
Why did you tag Mummy's Bed on that?
Because that's what's happened, you know. All these songs just came out of me, you know. I didn't sit down to think I'm going to write about my mother, or I didn't sit down to think I'm going to write about this, that, or the other. They all came out, you know, like all the best work of anybody's ever does, you know, whether it's an article or a, you know, it just the best ones come out, and all these came out because I had the time, and I was. When you do, if you're on holiday or in therapy or wherever you are, if you spend time, like in India, I wrote the last batch of best songs, you know, where I could write a lot like I'm So Tired and Yeah Blues, where they were pretty sort of realistic, you know, they were about me, and it always struck me as, funny, ironic or something, that I was writing in supposedly in the presence of guru and meditating so many hours a day. I was writing I'm So Tired and you know, songs of such pain as Your Blues, which I meant, it wasn't just me, right, you know, I was trying to express it in blues idiom, because
cold turkey.
Yeah, but that was I was writing Maharishi's camp writing. I want to die, you know.
Your Blues, was that also deliberately meant to be a parody of the English blues?
Yeah, well, a bit, because I'm a bit. We're all self-conscious, and Beatles super self-conscious people about parodying Americans, which we do and have done. I know we developed our own style, but we still, in a way, parody American music. And see, like, this is interesting because in the early days in England, all the groups were like Elvis. And a backing group, and the Beatles deliberately didn't move like Elvis. That was our policy because we found it stupid and bullshit, you know. And then Mick Jagger came out and resurrected bullshit movement, you know, whittling your arse and that. So then people began to say, well, the Beatles are passe because they don't move. But we did it as an intellectual. When we were younger, we used to move, we used to jump about and do all the things they're doing now, like going on stage with toilet seats and shitting and pissing. That's what we're doing in Hamburg, you know, and smashing things up. It wasn't a thing that Pete Townsend sort of worked out. It's something that you do when you play 6 or 7 hours. There's nothing else to do. You smash the place up. You insult everybody, you know. But we were groomed, you know, and we dropped all that. And the same with whatever it was we started off talking about, you know, which was what? About singing, what was it? What was the beginning of that?
About your blues deliberately.
Yeah, so there's a self-consciousness about suddenly singing blues. I mean, we were all listening to Sleepy John Estes and all that in art school, like everybody else, you know. But to sing it was something else, you know. And so I was self-conscious about doing it. So I think Dylan does it a lot, you know. In case he's not sure of himself, he makes it double entendre. So therefore you're secure in your hipness. But George was saying, Paul was saying, don't call it Yeah Blues, just say it straight, you know. But I was self-conscious and I went for the Yeah Blues, you know.
Honestly, there's some...
But I think all that is past now, because I think the musicians we've all got over it, you know, that self-consciousness.
You know, I think John, being John, is a bit unfair to his music in a way. I like to just add a few things, you know. Like, he can go on for an hour or something, but I mean, one thing is, about the Art Janov, you know. Say if John fell in love, you know, he's always falling in love with all sorts of things, you know, Maharashtra, to whatnot.
Well,
could they tape it, and I'll listen to it later?
Nobody knows. There's a point on the first song on Yoko's track where the guitar comes in, and even Yoko thought it was her voice. Because the session,
amazing.
We did all the Yoko's in one night.
Mm.
A whole session, it was just fantastic.
The whole album?
Yeah. Except for there's a track with Ornette Coleman that was from the past that we put on to show people that she wasn't discovered by the Beatles, and that she's been around a few years. I mean, we've got stuff of her with Cage, Ornette Coleman, everywhere. We're going to put Oldies But Goldies out next for Yoko.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the stuff with all the... I'll play it and talk about it later. Okay.
Now I just think that... you know, he just goes on falling in love with all sorts of things. But it's like, say, if he fell in love with some girl or something and he wrote a song. Who he fell in love is not very important. It's the outcome of it. You know, the song itself is important.
Well, there's a lot. For instance, you have to say the song like Well, Well, Well.
Yes.
It's connected with Final Fantasy.
Well,
the theory of that song.
Why?
What?
The screaming.
No, but listen to Cold Turkey.
Well, he's screaming already there.
Listen to... Twist and Shout. I couldn't sing the damn thing. I was just screaming. Listen to Wop Wop Aloom or Blop Bamboo. Don't get the therapy confused with the music.
No, I was screaming.
Yoko's whole thing was that scream. Listen to Don't Worry Kyoko. It's one of the fucking best rock and roll records ever made. Listen to it and play Tutti Frutti. Listen to Don't Worry Kyoko, the other side of Cold Turkey. You see, I'm digressing from my album. If somebody with a rock-oriented mind can possibly listen to her stuff, you'll see what she's doing. It's fantastic, you know. It's as important as anything we ever did, and as important as anything Stones or Townsend ever did. And listen to it, you know, and you'll hear what she's putting down. And I, on Cold Turkey, I'm getting towards it.
And you were saying about Nike.
I'm influenced by her music. 1,000%, you know, more than ever was by Dylan or anything. She makes music like you've never heard on earth, you know. And when the musicians play with it, they're inspired out of their skulls. They might go, I don't know how much they play it later. You see them, wait till we've got a cut of her from the Lyceum in London with 15 or 20 musicians playing with her, from Bonnie and Delaney and a fucking lot. And we played the tracks the other night. It's the most fantastic music I've ever heard. And they've probably gone away and forgotten all about it. We're going to put it out. It's fantastic, you know.
I was just going to.
It's like 20 years ahead of its time. Anyway, back to mine.
Yes, Cold Turkey. When you were.
Yeah. Listen to
when
Turkey.
You talk about Cold Turkey. You said that's not a song. That's a diary.
Yeah. Well, so is this.
Everything.
So is this, you know. And I announced Cold Turkey on the Lyceum, saying, "I'm going to sing a song about pain."
Yes, yes. And that was
so
before.
So pain and screaming was before Janov. I mean, Janov showed, you know, I went through therapy like I told you with him, you know, and I'm probably looser all over.
Are you less paranoid now?
No, but I can feel my own fear. I can feel my own pain. Therefore, I can handle it better than I could before. That's all. I'm the same, only there's a channel. It doesn't just remain in me. It goes round and I can move a little easier.
What was your experience with heroin?
Heroin.
Anything on this we'll take out later.
Okay. It just was not too much fun, you know. I never injected it, and we sniffed a little, you know, when we were in real pain. I mean, we just couldn't. People were giving us such a hard time. No, but we got such a hard time from everyone, you know. And I've had so much shit thrown at me and at Yoko, you know, especially at Yoko. People just, like Peter Brown in our office, and you can put this in. After we come back from 6 months, he comes down and shakes my hand and doesn't even say hello to her. You know. And that's going on all the time, you know. And we get in so much pain that we have to do something about it, you know. And that's what happened to us, you know. We took H because of what the Beatles and their pals were doing to us.
Let's go back.
And we got out of it, you know.
You know, like he was saying about Phil Spector.
I mean, they didn't set down to do it, but people's things came out at that period, you know. And I don't forget. You know.
No, he really produced his own stuff, you know. Like, Phil is, as you know, well known about, very skillful sort of, you know, technician, you know, in electronics and engineering.
But let's not take away from what he did do, which was bring a lot of energy and taught me a lot. And I would use him again.
Yes, but he's so definite about things, you know.
I know what I want, you see. Yes. But Phil's more, when I say to Phil I want this, he gets at me. Mm. Like that, you know. Thank you. I know, you know, if he hears the voice, he can,
no,
the Spectre, you can hear Spectre on the album, you know, and you can hear me. No, that was me. I did that before Phil came, you see.
Right. Exactly.
I did quite a lot of it before
he
came.
And also that mother bell, you know, he was saying it's a church bell, and it's connected with his childhood. He was always saying, you know, Sundays I heard church bell, you know.
Yeah, I read an article on some new southern country singer who wrote something about Sundays, lonely days, that feeling. Okay.
In past records, you know, it's always Will Sergeant Pepper's, you know, come see the show.
Yeah.
Come on, come around, listen to us. And then this record, so personally, you know.
Well, that see, Paul said come and see the show. I mean, I didn't. You know.
What do you?
I said, I read the news today, oh boy, you know, that's what I said. I'm Mr. Kite, mind you. But, you know, so I can't...
You're Mr. Kite.
No, I never thought... I wrote that as a pure poetic job, you know, to write a song. I was sitting there and I had to write because it was time to write, you know. And I had to write it quick because otherwise I wouldn't have been on the album. So I had to knock off a few songs. I knocked off it, Day in the Life, or my section of it. And whatever we were talking about, Mr. Kite and something like that. I was very paranoid in those days. I could hardly move.
I read that a little interview around when you went to the Rock Motorbike in Toronto. And you said you were throwing up before you went on stage.
Yeah, I was. And, you know, off the cuff, we were full of junk, too.
They're throwing up?
Oh, yeah, throwing up. I just threw up for hours till I went on. I nearly threw up in cold. I read a review in Stone about the film, which I haven't seen yet. We're meant to see it tomorrow, that Rock and Roll. And they're saying, you know, I was this and that. And I was throwing up nearly in the number. I could hardly sing any of them. I was full of shit, you know.
Would you still be that nervous if it was pure public?
Always that nervous, you know, but... With one thing and another, it just had to come out some way, you know. I don't think I'll do much appearing. It's not worth the strain, you know. I don't want to perform too much for people.
What do you think of George's album?
I don't know, you know. I think it's all right, you know. When, you know, personally, at home, I wouldn't play that kind of music, you know. I don't want to hurt George's feelings. I mean, I don't know how to say about it, you know. I think it's better than Paul's.
What do you think of Paul's?
I thought Paul's was rubbish, you know. I think he'll make a better one when he's frightened into it. But I thought that first one was just a load of, I told you, light and whatever, you know, that crack. But when I hear, listen to the radio, and I hear George's stuff coming over, well, then it's pretty bloody good, you know. It's like that. But my personal tastes are very strange, you know.
What are your personal tastes,
man? Wop, wop, aluma. You know? I mean, I like rock and roll, man. I don't like much else.